So I read there was that little sonnet, I guess, or whatever you'd like to call it.
Uh-huh. Right.
And then yours was all the detail underneath.
Well, underneath that were some back and forths.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So there were, as you read down there, the author's name would be in front of the paragraph of who was saying what.
I see. Okay. I was a bit, I didn't get that. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot my thumb. Okay, but what did that have to do with?
Someone's pecker. That's always a good question.
I'm so glad you didn't make me say it again.
Most of the content was from a gentleman named whoever I'd mentioned in the email.
Patterson.
Jordan Patterson, right? Or Peterson?
Peterson.
Yes.
Jordan Peterson.
Not Jordan. Peterson, whatever his name is, something Peterson. Anyway, he's a, you know, relatively well-known, Western espouser of Dzogchen.
Dzogchen.
Yeah. Okay. Dzogchen is a an amalgam of Bon, Tibetan, Bon, shamanic roots with, you know, high altitude Buddhism. And is one of several vehicles that can be referred to as the, you know, direct path, left-hand path, right-hand path, depending on if you're ambidextrous or not.
You say these meetings aren't supposed to be fun.
Right. No, I insist that they are. And he's a, you know, I'm sure he's a nice guy and that a lot of people really like him.
Right.
Jackson, I think. Jackson Peterson, right?
That's it.
Yeah. And, you know, like anyone in the business of doling out exotic communiques about the nature of awareness and means to, you know, pierce, penetrate, back to that. Or, it's all Shiva Shakti when you get right down to it. Yeah. Right. So, you know, let's just say he took up the space in that conversation. I'm sure he didn't write that stuff, at least from, at least for that purpose.
Okay.
He's an author, and so that was probably just a copy and paste from things either in former lectures that he's given or books that he's
written. Up at the top there was a different name.
That was the first salvo, the first person that posted. This was a Facebook, you know, extract.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, okay. So the first person that posted had that image, you know, that sonnet. And then I replied and he replied and we played around. And then in comes Jackson Peterson to do this gargantuan copy and paste to give us all a free, you know, lesson in how to use, you know, Dzogchen to undermine, you know, unreality.
Mm-hmm.
And so... No, this is a fun, challenging, and entertaining vehicle, right? Playing around with consciousness, with mind, philosophies, cosmologies, duality, non-duality, systems, promises, right? It's a tricky business, right? It's a slippery slope and a razor's edge. And there are all kinds of ways to launch a conversation, share attention, look into the nature of whatever consciousness might or might not be, how, you know, what we refer to as, you know, ego, separation, indignation, suffering arises, what kind of ameliorative there are across so many systems, right?
Right.
Be they herbal, medicinal, shamanic, singing bowls, non-duality, Christian, right?
Right.
I mean, humans are like, woo! We're nutty. So when, you know, kind of a bold evocateur, let's say like Jackson Peterson comes along and dumps all of this stuff on your face, you know, it's a little bit of an assault. It's kind of like, fuck you. You know, enter into a conversation if you have the cojones to do that. If you have the affection to do that, rather than lay down some, you know, nonsense that doesn't even belong to you. Hmm. Right.
But we still haven't gotten to why we're talking about his pepper.
Oh. Yeah. It's a roundabout way to get to the, who knows? I don't know.
Oh, okay.
Well, you know, there's,
oh, so you just brought that up because you thought that that's perhaps how he felt. You were using it as more of a metaphor than actual any evidence you have of having him have a magical pecker.
Yeah, I don't know if he has one. I hope I hope he does. And that people have used it to their betterment.
Okay.
But I can't say with any first-hand experience.
I see. I thought there was some sort of that scandal.
That he wields a magic pecker. Or has used it inappropriately in spiritual circles.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I thought there was some sort of scandal that you were referring
There's
to.
There's always a scandal.
And it wasn't privy to.
Right. Whether there is one or there isn't one, there's always one.
Well, you're going to begin spreading one.
Or, yeah, I could start one. You know, in the day when anyone who was going to see Papaji in a town called Lucknow in India, you know, the joke amongst the Advaitists of the day were all you had to do was fly over Lucknow and you'd be enlightened.
I see.
So it was a poetic license on Jackson's magical twang doodle.
Us by the chuckle.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not only does the Dzogchen literature help unmask some of the, you know, presumptions of personified consciousness, so does Kashmiri Shaivism.
What exactly is personified consciousness?
That is an abbreviation for the myth of you being you.
Mm. Yeah. Of an I.
Yeah, right.
Personified, I say.
Right, okay. Right. I mean, you look at the common way that we relate to whatever this is, including ourselves, through, you know, somatic modes, physical modes, through emotional, sentimental modes, through strategy, survival modes, we can find a lot of me as the, you know, anchor, as the root, right?
Sorry, I'm still thinking.
That's
of
fine. Yeah, they can go on.
You said a lot. Sorry.
Yeah,
I'll stop.
One day we were having breakfast up in Chalfont, and we were using street names in this same way, and we were just on it for hours. We were hysterical. God, it was so funny. Yeah.
Okay.
So, yes, what is, one of the early and necessary stages, let's say, of recalibrating whatever awareness and attention might be, is to notice what personified consciousness is, how it rolls, how you experience yourself, how one experiences themselves. And to look, carefully at the derivatives of time, of space, birth, death, life, right? Survival, thriving, disappointment, right? Victimization, codependency, addiction, recovery, elaborate spiritual experience, long hours on a cushion, on and on, right? So we presume all of this quite miraculous content to be the arbiter of what we imagine experience to be, or what we imagine my experience to be, how content driven it is, how at odds we are or can be with the rhythm and runes of our life, and the role that imagination plays, that projection plays in the elaborate ruse and story that I call myself, and the content and the conditioning and the predilection that I have for being me in the way that I'm me, in the moods that I possess, in the generosity or lack of generosity that I may feel, in what's driving, my agenda over the course of a day or a life, the nature of the relationships that I have, whether they're nourishing and pleasing and generate, spontaneous affection, or whether I'm, at odds and in disappointment or in fear, retribution, right, with people and places and things. I mean, we're incredibly, each one of us, rich in what I'm referring to as personified consciousness, right? The story of myself, the sense of persistence, culpability. And we, if one is on a so-called seeker journey, right, so-called spiritual journey, maybe a reconsideration of the warp and woof of consciousness starts to percolate up.
How do you feel about so we have the I, which we consider ourselves as the person who believes is functioning, which I'm not sure is really true, because there's a lot of obviously things we do that we're subconsciously doing. But how do you feel about the higher self, like being able to draw on information from your higher self?
Well, yeah, of course. One can have pleasant and, for a time, reliable experiences of what might be referred to as a higher self. A more noble permutation of my otherwise selfish nature. Or getting information, guidance, mm-hmm. encouragement from what feels to be a less personal source, whether that's a spirit guide, whether that's one's higher power, whether it's a nature spirit or a sprite, a unicorn that comes in a dream, your child, right, unsuspectingly gives you some kind of feedback that just, what, right? So yeah, anything and everything that's appearing in and as consciousness can play the role of regrettable companion and higher power, and can shift on a dime. We're allowed, why not, to believe anything we want about this, right? Maybe that's the closest evidence we have of free will. You can believe whatever you want about this. You can personify it. You can hierarchize it. You can worship it. You can denigrate it. You can satanize it. You can purify it. You can lift people up. You can tear people down. You can be a victim. You can be a hero. You know, and that's all in 5 minutes. You could do that all in 5 minutes or less even. Repeat.
It's all not.
One day you have a spiritual experience, one day you don't.
It's just not definitive.
Has it ever been?
No.
Right. I mean, that's worth, you know, like noticing. Wow, this is not definitive. It is at best ambiguous and unattainable. And the, you know, somewhat incessant presumption of this being about myself, or that experience denotes that I am a creature in a world bookended by birth and death, might be up for reconsideration.
Say that again? The what might be?
The familiar fabric and way in which we experience whatever this is may be up for reconsideration. If I start to shift, whether through, you know, effort or no effort, from evidence-based living, the artifacts of experience. So my, not that it's my, not that it's even awareness, but whatever this is, you can say, starts to retreat from its fascination with what it's capable of creating. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of our, call it personification, is made of what we imagine we've found in and as experience. My beliefs, my superstitions, my joys, my lack thereof, my wounds,
right?
My make-believe is a personification, right? An anthropomorphization of what we imagine our prior experience has been. And then we take this habit of personification, imagination, belief, and certainty, and we impose it upon present experience and anticipate future experience from that same basic bias or presumption. And so the repetition, the self-fulfilling repetition of who and what I take myself to be or what I take reality to be continues unabated with never a thought that it might be something other than what I imagine it to be. Now that, in a sense, is where Dzogchen and Kashmiri Shaivism and you know, non-duality, Advaita, and the shit that the other Buddhists do, you know, that Vipassana, right, et cetera, Western occultism, all kinds of sources where you can find sometimes fascinating, thrilling, terrifying ingress to a shift in the bias field, the unexamined bias field. That's shamanic alchemy. You know, one way to look at shamanism is, again, a kind of cultural appropriation. The medicine man, the healer, the one that could find the animals, the one that could predict the weather, the one that helped midwife.
But I had read at times if he was wrong, he would get banished.
Well, okay, if you were good at it, you know, and you were on a roll, you were, you know, people brought you money and gave you food and, you know, because we're all superstitious fundamentally and we're at odds oftentimes with, you know, call it the greater unpredictable, sometimes unfriendly cosmos. And so the shaman can act as an intervener on our part, just like the guru can be an intervener, just like the, you know, the priest can be an intervener on our behalf. So if you're on a roll, you're a good shaman. And if people start dying and getting sick and you can't find the animals and you're not predicting the weather, you're out. Who's next? So that's one kind of, you know, shamanic notion or idea. But there's other ways to use the word shaman or alchemist to look at the nature of consciousness. The warp and woof, the texture, the rhythm, the ambiguity, the strangeness of consciousness itself. Look at what we use or rely upon as the evidence for personification. That's another kind of shamanism. That's not about, you know, healing the sick, at least not the physically sick. It could be healing the fracture and the split in our own consciousness, the fracture and split in our own identification, the at oddsness that we may feel with creation, the fear and the trepidation that we may feel, the bargaining that we do. One could say by habit, familiarity. We move through the day as our own sportscaster, narrating what's happening and what's not happening, whether we're enjoying or not enjoying, whether we're doing what we want to be doing or not, how we're going to feel a month from now, whether I'm with or not with the person I really want to be, how I'm going to meet the one if I'm not with the one, or how am I going to dump the one that I have. It goes on and on. I mean, managing kids is, you know, that's full-time consciousness, right? The coming and going of the children, the welfare, the homework, the healing, the friends, the internet, the da-da-da-da-da. I mean, you're a police squad. You're on bomb squad duty, right? So
it's interesting you said that, because I feel like if I would be wishful thinking, but I'm thinking if I wasn't raising kids for so long, I would be a little further along on my spiritual path. But
Could be the other way. Could be you wouldn't be half as far.
Perhaps. Probably.
We can't say. See, this is the other thing that when you look at the presumptuous, I'll call it presumptuous, content of what we call experiencing, as a chronological exposition, like something happened to you before now. And you can recall aspects of your life from however young you can recall it, and you can kind of paint a trajectory, right? You could scrapbook your life in abbreviated terms and look at the phases and the people and the what's and the not what's and what you did right and what you did wrong and what you could and shouldn't maybe have done, and you can add it all up and you can say, look at me, I am beautiful, I am here today. Or you might say, I'm miserable. I don't know what to do about myself. Which, for me anyway, was the more common. You see, so, again, when our... Here's present experience.
That's it.
Here it is. So then are you really the product of everything that's happened to you before now? Are you really conditioned by everything that's happened to you before now? Or is this like, so novel, so brand new, so strange, completely unconditioned, uncharacterizable?
Mm-hmm. knowledge they can't be. Because there's certain things you take for granted.
Well, that's what we're looking at, is what is the nature of personified consciousness that takes certain things for granted that then seduces you into imagining you're the product of something. It seduces you into imagining that one is the product of what came before. That's content-driven analysis, behavioral analysis.
So my imagination is seducing myself.
Yes. Yeah. And you're in, and you are in, you know, you're an accomplice. We are. We're an accomplice to our own imagination and the so-called conclusions, behavioral, spiritual, secular, or otherwise, that we reach as we continue to operate in the field of narration. We are an accomplice to hallucination. Maybe, quite possibly, we can reconsider whatever present experience might or might not be, and in a manner of speaking, release ourselves from anticipation and from belief. Release ourselves from the unspoken presumption that I'm the product of anything. As soon as we find content in our own mind, our own experience, our own thinking, and our own soliloquy, our own eulogy, as soon as we find content, we've narrated, right? We've added a layer of orientation, explanation, predictive presumption, predictive accusation, on the unpatterned miracle of present experience. So we're partial. We partialize ourselves as being a product of content, a product of conditioning, a product of memory, of belief, of superstition. Preference. We're self-enslaved. And again, none of this happens, you know, with your explicit permission. It's just a, you know, a movement, a kind of a movement of mind, of orientation.
I'm thinking it's more of like an entertainment.
Okay, yes, aren't we entertained by our own thinking? Would we be intimidated at all to, let's just say, relax enough that I don't have to be a product of thinking, an audience to thinking, you know, or the insister upon thinking. And it's not just thinking, really, it's, see, personification is subtler than just, right, what thinking is. Like, hey, thinking is fine. Let thinking come and go. Does it have to be binding? Does it have to be about me? Does it have to suggest choice or agreement? Can it just be as random as the breeze through a wheat field? But you see, we cling to thinking and the implication of thinking, and that furthers the, let's just say, the inertia of personification. Maybe that's entertaining. Maybe it's a hell realm.
So if one doesn't think, what is there to do?
Well, let's say all the doing that we've done did itself anyway, with or without the presence of thinking. Mm-hmm. Now, maybe you'll sit on the couch more often, having nothing to do, and be remarkably nourished by it. Maybe you won't. It's not really important what you do or you don't do. That could be some kind of evidence of how far along you are on a path that has no destination anyway. You know full well, better than anyone, how your thinking occurs in the privacy of your life. And the degree to which you are loyal to that thinking, rely upon that thinking, are entertained by that thinking. Structure your relationships according to, right, that thinking.
Twilight Stick.
It's French fries. Zob Chen French fries.
Yeah. I'll try that at some point.
No, it's okay. I was just saying, you can see.
I am. I'm fast asleep.
So you don't believe... Yeah, okay.
I believe it. No, whatever it is.
Well, do you sense that there is a momentum in life that is just intrinsically there? That, you know, even though, like, you, I liked what you said about the bookends, which is, you know, birth and death. So between those bookends, you know, it seems as though that there should be some sort of movement.
Well, you imagine movement through the mystical capacity of recollection and comparison. You imagine that you were somewhere before here, before now. And so being here and now has to be downstream of where you were prior, which includes the imagination of being elsewhere than here and elsewhere than now in your so-called future. So when you can look at the scalability of imagination to appear to look back, appear to look present, and appear to look future, you can find quite a sine wave.
So you're just saying that time isn't linear.
Time doesn't mean anything. Not its presence, not its absence. Not its linearity, not its non-linearity. All you can find is, this is the real. Now this is. And it has no rules. See, even the notion of time is derived from the mystical capacity, magical capacity, to think that you existed before now. And you're going strong. But that's just another subtle weave of personification. And you must use what we're referring to as mind or memory or inner narration to trace the experiences you had before now. See that, when we do that, and of course, we all do that. I'm not singling anybody out or in, you know. You can see the indication, what's inferred by using mind and narration, memory and mentation to suggest a world. To create the myth that your existence is bookended between birth and death as a creature. Which is the materialization of the, dare I say, the actual nature of experience. We're materializing the actual nature of experience to suggest or infer prior experience, present experience, and future experience. And that also contributes to the creaturification of one's existence as a person, as a Homo sapien, as a man, woman, as a Jew, Jain, Christian, Hopi, Pebble on the Hill. What is this? Not that it need be anything, if I don't have a story about it. If I don't have a strong presumption, hypocrisy of what this is, of who I am, how it came about, where it's going, how much time we have left. How I'm going to heal my regret. How I'm going to, you know, attract my soulmate. How I'm going to survive the death of my partner or perhaps my children. How I'm going to make a living. You know, hey, we just had, you know, Chinese food and French fries. We're fine. Not everyone just had Chinese food and French fries. Or a warm place to hang out and talk about Zog fucking Chen. Okay.
Well, I guess there is some drawbacks to being awakened in some sense. I mean, if you're not thinking about those things or why you exist, it's almost a blessing. So, in some sense.
You can't have anyone else's experience. And you're not, nor are any of us, in control of our own.
Well, if we're actually having an experience.
If we're even having one.
I swear I ate French fries in my
I can feel it.
See, that's why I'm saying we're having parallel experiences. We ate French fries. We can both remember back being there and eating French fries.
Yes, that's right. Maybe you've had French fries 20,000 times in your life. And you can only remember one, the most recent.
But there is evidence to show if they examined my stomach, they could prove that there was French fries in my stomach.
Well, yeah, maybe. Right. See, again, and I mean, this is a very fun way of looking at the conjuring capacity of whatever consciousness is.
Mm-hmm. So it still could be conjuring.
It's all conjuring. Even the remains of the woolly mammoth exist only presently.
Yeah, like meaning, whatever meaning we give something, it's always after something.
Yeah.
It's an overlying object, presence that is recollected and said, oh, that means, da-da-da.
Yes.
And you have a thinker and you have an overlying interpretation of sorts.
There you go.
Starts to get thick.
In a hurry.
You have agreement, too. You hang around people that agree with you.
It's so powerful it can manifest half-digested French fries in your gut. That's right. Scat fries.
It's the Tao of poo.
It's all the Tao of poo. Yeah. Whatever present experience might be, it can be quite stupefying. As we experiment with simply dropping into sensing, not so much the arbitration, the hallucination of thinking.
How do you feel with, like, with repetition and prayer to help entertain the mind?
Yes. You know, TM made a living out of doling out mantra and a 20-minute repetition session to shift the sine wave, right, of brain function and brain activity. Chanting, mantra, breath meditation, asana. Yes. And then, you know, some people make a career out of it. They make a career out of the cultivation of, you know, call it purification technologies. So they meditate for hours, they chant for hours, they do mantra for hours, they light candles, they throw stuff in the fire, they say swaha. They make a career out of it. Then they teach other people how to do all of this repetitive, right? Institutionalized bhakti. So that they too can quiet their mind. You know, Thich Nhat Hanh wants you to chew your food 20 times. Quietly seething, singing, breathing in, breathing out. I'm an asparagus. You know, all right. Knock yourself out. You're an asparagus. Poof. Poof, you're fried okra. Poof. Yeah, so, you know, they have a role to play, you know, when we're find ourselves moving into contemplative, expressive, ritualistic religion or spirituality. We're going to adopt these things. We're going to experiment with them. And they bring the so-called fruits and results that they bring. And then maybe we grow tired of them, or appropriately more suspicious of them.
Well, it's a way of entertaining the mind without allowing it to have illusions.
Possibly. Maybe. The illusions get, they can outwit you at every turn. They become more subtle. They hide in the shadows. You think you're gaining on the effluent of mind, but it's just got you fooled. Rather than try to outsmart the mind and what its nefarious agenda is, you can see through the implication of mind. You can just see through the presumption that mind ever amounts to anything. If it never amounts to anything, you don't have to control it. So it's more a question of identification than it is the presence or absence of thought.
With identifying with those particular thoughts.
Identifying with the whole of your experience, not just the thinking. Presuming anything about the whole or the entirety of experience, not just the thinking.
In essence, relating it to what we have from prior experience.
Okay, yes. That's one aspect, of course. Yep. Being unbound is not a new way of relating. It's the cessation of relating. So that doesn't make one unrelatable. Isn't this a spontaneous presentation of unconditioned and unconditionable energies, if we can call them that, dancing or expressing in what each one of us may be experiencing as experience, without possibly knowing, even with the best of our articulation, what each of us is experiencing about experience right now?
We're just kind of playing.
We're being played.
Oh, you don't think?
This is playing its own harp for its own pleasure.
Yeah, I mean, according to, I learned a bit more about Hindu gods and about Leela, and about the Leela is the goddess of drama, and so she just. So it's basically what I kind of referred it to as all the world's a stage.
Sure.
You know, we could just be being played.
Yes.
By these Hindu gods.
Well, who's playing them? Don't imagine that the Hindu gods are sovereign. They're not.
I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. That's right. The idea of Hindu gods is a myth. Hindu gods are a myth. Being played for sure is happening, but who's playing who? That's another question.
Well, my question was actually about the Hindu gods, were that if they're gods of us all and we're all being part of the play, then how come in every representation they look only like Indian people?
Oh, oops. Uh-huh. That's not a giveaway.
Well, actually, if the dog is looking, then it's the dog.
We can't know that, but it sounds fair.
Well, about
Ralphie, what do you see?
It was kind of fun. In Babylon 5, they were playing around with some great being.
Yes.
And each species, when they looked at the great being,
right,
what they saw was
their species,
a radiant, luminous version of their species.
Of them, yeah, sure. That's not a giveaway.
Yeah. Mm. So it was like, as you wish.
Yep.
But don't count on it to be permanent or to be a solid fact of, of business.
Yeah, I mean, all of these gods and goddesses
isness.
Yeah, I make things up to
you. I like that. It's a hallmark. Isness.
Business can go a long way. Take two.
Like funny business. Business.
Call me in the morning.
Yes, that's right.
Take this one isness and just play around with that for a little while.
Yes. So we can notice that, you know, whatever this is or isn't anthropomorphizes and projects according to its own self-image. And that's why all the Hindu gods and goddesses that rule over everyone look like Indians. Yeah. It's all, you see, it's all kind of culturally relative. Mm-hmm. The projection of super beings is all a right cultural relativistic projection.
It does feel like, though, I mean, I'm may be imagining it, but there does feel like there's a synchronicity.
That's all there is.
That's all there is.
See, there's only one thing, which is not a thing. So its nature must be perfectly synchronistic, mm-hmm. to the bone. Mm-hmm. It's all, that's all there is, you know, apparent implication, apparent synchronicity. But you see, again, it's where you're identifying, where one identifies. If you're identified as a perceiver of the fabric and the artifacts of experience, then you can identify what could be considered synchronicity, sacred, marvelous synchronicity. But if you're not identified with the myth of experiencing itself, then really everything can just fuck off, even though it is perfectly synchronous. It's nothing at all. There's as much evidence for this being nothing at all as there is for it to be a perfect synchronicity being managed by Hindu gods.
But if there was really nothingness, it would be an awful lot of waste of energy.
Well, if you've got an unlimited amount, you don't think in terms of waste.
Oh, interesting. Very interesting.
If you're unlimited in your inherent capacity, where's the waste? You mean the Leela should play a different way? It should be more efficient.
Meaningful.
Right. To me, as an aspiring Hindu god.
Because if it isn't meaningful, it's a waste of time.
That's right. If it's not meaningful to me, off with their heads.
You see, that's got layers of education.
Well, this is the, by looking at it, you can get, let's just say, more adroitly clear of the way in which consciousness personifies, projects, presumes, is fascinated with itself, mm-hmm. on an ongoing, call it streaming kind of nature. You're like, whoa, wow, this is the shit. So the more, well, we could say softly in one respect, we could say subtly or nuanced in the way that your gates of perception, your gates of capacity open up so that you're not limited to personal narration. You're not limited to superstition or belief. Or even the notion of birth, death, or causality. Not limited to any of these things, then holy shit, it's just wide open synchronicity expressing any which way it pleases, with or without motive, agenda, or premeditation. And the way I'm appearing to myself is just that.
And unlimited
energy. Okay. All right. So see, being, whatever being might be, has more opportunity, has more bandwidth than merely presuming itself to be a causal human.
Yes, I agree.
Okay.
Yes.
So that might suggest, which is not trivial, that it's like, oh my God, what else is this than my experience of myself as the causal human?
Yes.
Boom. Mic drop. Now your asan is just fascination, welcoming, surprise. Mm-hmm. It has no motive. It has no destination.
As to what unfolds.
Yes.
Yes.
And it can be so profoundly subtle that it's not even interested in what unfolds.
Yes.
It's not anathema to it. It's not resigned. It has no, you know, disdain. It's just, I don't really care what unfolds because it's never been my business anyway. I'm the absolute. This is the absolute. I'm that. The heating system agrees.
So hum.
But even that becomes, you know, you have to be always a little bit a little bit cautious, right? Around where the capacity to be a dramatist can go.
What do you mean?
You can say all kinds of things about what this is and what you are, what this isn't and what you're not, et cetera, et cetera. But again, those are all kinds of, you know.
It's futile to try to explain
that
to other people. I've definitely gotten to that point that.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't portray your reality or existence
to someone else, even if they're trying to understand. You can beckon the vitality of attention, the vitality of awareness. And you could say walk together, to sense this, to see clearly what and how consciousness, the mind, experience, language, narration, time, space, role. You have to surrender a certain amount of self-interest to do that. Because you're not looking at the momentum of your happy or unhappiness in a life where you are failing certain fulfillments and then committed to what you're going to do about yourself. You have to, at least for a short time, put down the imagination of yourself and the fulfillingness or lack of fulfillingness that you may be enjoying or suffering and get right about here and right about now and just check this the fuck out. If we're still so strongly identified with the momentum of the imagination of my personal life, you can't do it.
But it also seems that people try to draw you into the drama, because if you're just walking your life, it seems like all these people are demanding things out of your...
One of the key skills of shamanic alchemy is learning how to duck. Or, if you're not deeply personified yourself, then the projection of suffering, engagement, entitlement, stalking, and everything else that humans do with other humans, you just go with it because you're not holding yourself out as having to be protected from it, right? If I'm no longer concerned with my body, my mind, my stuff, my life, my deeds and entitlements, and shit goes south, you're like, shit's gone south. You roll with it.
Right.
And that doesn't mean that you're also not more adept at avoiding, right, unneeded and unnecessary entanglement.
Entanglement.
Yeah. As one becomes free of inner entanglement, then you have more ability, more skills to be uninvolved in the entanglement that others may attempt, consciously or otherwise, to project upon you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, without being an idiot or, you know. I mean, sometimes you have to protect yourself quite vigorously. Sometimes you can do it, you know, with just a little tap on the couch.
Mm-hmm.
Depends on the circumstances and the situation, you know, what's coming your way.
Well, I think that the draw to becoming entangled is somewhat motivated by the desire to better humanity in some sense.
You can believe anything you want to believe,
right,
about your and everyone else's motives and where they go.
Yes.
Nobody knows, really.
Indeed. So you can't feel obligated to become entangled in someone else's agenda just because it seems as though...
You don't really know from moment to moment why you're motivated to do what it appears you're motivated to do, and whether you consent to that motivation or not. It's only after the fact that we can tell a hypothetical story about what it was that happened and why it happened and what role I might have had to play in it. You just don't know. It's too mysterious. And in order to do that, in order to have like a really clear idea of what the fuck just happened,
mm-hmm,
and whose fault was it, you have to make it up anyway.
Well, we have to have some sort. I mean, there has to be some.
Does there?
But, I mean, you just can't.
Sure you can.
You just don't want to be an asshole.
Okay. All right.
All right.
Well,
let's say that you don't.
Jeffrey Dahmer wasn't really fond of eating people, but he couldn't stop himself.
Seriously, you're going to go there.
Well.
I prefer French fries.
That's right. Okay, yeah. So you want to be as cooperative and pleasant and on board as you possibly can be, you know, along the way.
But you are getting dragged into.
Then, like.
What did we call that again?
Yeah.
What was that? Entanglement.
Yes. The shitbox of other people's ideas.
But then again, I can't sit there and criticize other people's ideas if I'm not going to. I am somewhat getting entangled in it then.
When you're not going to, it's not possible to resolve the curious, magical complexity of the rhythm of relations from some kind of, you know, lofty or practical place. Everything's just fucking rolling away.
True.
Rolling on.
I can't even figure out my own.
You have no idea.
How in the world am I going to figure out what you're thinking?
You have no idea.
I don't even know what the fuck I'm thinking.
You don't know what you're thinking.
No.
It's not possible to critique what the fuck it is that's going down with any kind of accuracy. But if it makes you laugh, then that's a sign that you're less entangled.
Well, I am becoming free within myself.
Yes.
But I am finding that that quite recently, actually, it feels as though everyone is trying to entangle me in.
Get used to it. As you soften in yourself, you become, let's just say, more spacious. Your electron field becomes more spacious. That means you become more terrifying and more attractive to other people. and they may not even be conscious of it. And so,
I thought it was my Shakti.
Well, okay. Then yes.
That's my electron space.
Then,
getting out of
then yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Seriously.
But you can also, let's just say, examine in your beatitude whether you're desirous of anyone noticing and or being a helpmate to those in some way.
That sounds like a biblical term.
Yes.
I really don't want to be helpful to them. It's funny. I don't. I don't.
That's fun to discover. You may be, one might be opening, let's say, to, you know, a different texture of whatever being might be. Not so codependent, not so demanding or insistent, not pleading, bargaining, and strategizing, not entangling toxically with other people. And you may go unnoticed, or all kinds of strange energy may be, you know, looking for you, looking to cathart with you. And why shouldn't it? And so then it becomes an opportunity, let's say, consciously or otherwise, right, to respond to that.
Or not.
Or not. Uh-huh. I mean, if there are 7.6 billion people, there's 7,599,999 that are insane. So we're all crazy. And our capacity for, you know, engaging, being with, living is fantastic. But even though there's 7-point-something billion, there's still only how many levels on the Enneagram? You're only allowed to be one of 12 personalities.
I haven't heard of that. The what gram?
Enneagram.
Enneagram?
You'll enjoy it once you start playing with it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're a 6, or you're a 4, or you're, yeah. Uh-huh. It's a fun system.
There is an awful lot. For what we really can't decide what is true or not, there is an awful lot of information.
Tons of, yeah.
I mean, so it's like, why does it just keep creating itself?
What else can it do?
Yeah.
Whatever this is can only do one thing.
Continue to
blow smoke up its own ass. That's all it can do. You think it's so powerful, right? It's so omnipotent, so omnipresent, so omniscient, so fat. No, it can only do one thing. It can only blow smoke up its own ass.
Take note.
And the libraries are a good example of that.
So you have a field of energy and a field of matter, you put the two together in this creative impulse, and stuff comes out of it.
Yeah, the proton is a chaos field.
And then it organizes itself various ways, and then it disintegrates
okay.
in various ways.
That's, yes.
And somehow there's individuated consciousness that pops it.
Yep.
Pops into creatures.
Yep.
And functions from a location.
Yeah, it appears to, yes.
Oh, I get this. Yeah.
Well, do you think we're the only, do you think animals have consciousness?
Everything is conscious.
they're conscious of their own being?
Hard to know.
I believe they are.
Yep. Some don't.
It's a sense of a specific oneness.
And does it ever self feel like it's part of a person? Or is his whole life
but they do,
to do what a liver cell does? Maybe.
But they do know. They all, once the body starts to make themselves, all the cells know where to go. They all know that they're a liver.
Isn't cellular specificity just mind-boggling?
Yeah.
Cellular differentiation and cellular specificity is mind-boggling. Mm-hmm. The function at the cellular level or the subcellular level, the sub-biologic level is like, excuse me? How subtle does the patterning go?
But see, that's all going on without even our knowledge.
Everything is going on without our knowledge. Whatever we call our knowledge is just, it's a spoof anyway.
Idea why what you say actually grounds me, which is very strange because this is really like heavy duty shit. But for some reason, it may be because we're in a basement that is like very grounded in here, but I don't understand it. I don't understand it. It gives me some sort of peace.
Yes, that's right. It's not me or what I say. Neither one is all that important, really. It's whatever you are seeing through the superficial nature and resonating with a harmonic that's
that vibration
deeper than perhaps the, you know, frivolous symptoms of imagination.
So we have frivolous and then we have deeper sense of imagination.
Absolutely.
Interesting.
The imagination has no limit in terms of its frivolity or its depth. It goes everywhere and anywhere it wants.
Okay, so you would gauge your imagination on different levels.
Well, imagination, experience, you know, self, sentience, as you pointed out, self-aware. Consciousness is so adroit. Manifest, expressive consciousness, whether from a universal perspective, you know, unimaginable tides of pinwheel universes, right? Transmutative black holes, fast-spinning neutron stars, and, you know, weirditudes that occur out in the so-called cosmos, or the gargantuan simplicity or locality of our so-called solar system, landing probes on Mars. Yeah. I mean, it's just too fantastic in every respect. So, again, as whatever attention might be or awareness discovers how to release from the intoxication of permutation, which is the symptom and artifacts of experience. You withdraw from the symptoms and artifacts of experience, and you go behind it. Mm-hmm. That is absolute. That is peace. Mm-hmm. And that peace is not personified peace, not behavioral peace. It's just absolutely beyond any inculcation of a world.
It's freeing.
as we discover from a first-hand point of view, the solidity, the sovereignty, the absolute nature of emptiness itself, then the folly of the world may be less of an imposition. No one in their right mind would try to entangle with you. You're unentangleable.
I like that.
Yeah.
It makes you a slippy character.
People have, it does feel.
Where do we discover this? Here. Just here. Just now. Just this. If there's realization, it's not of another time. It's not behavioral. It has nothing to do even with insight. It's not material.
And I think people want to entangle you so you can reinforce their hallucination.
Most drowning victims do. In one of the earlier Castaneda books, Journey to Ixtlan, I believe it was, if I remember the story correctly, Carlos comes back from, you know, a shamanic adventure in the woods with a moth or whatever, and he's, you know, adjusted. And or maybe it was Don Gennaro that was telling him the story of his own experience. I forget which one. But after tangling with the ally and being recalibrated, you know, coming back into the village, everyone was like, you know, and he just saw this wave of ghosts, right? Coming at him for nope, saw through all of it and was untouched. Just walked through the melee. So, if one's consciousness is still of an entangling nature through unexplored presumptions of birth and death and space and time and anthropomorphization and projection and narration and language and superstition and belief and gender and everything that makes up our fabric of the world, then you're still the creature. Shamanic alchemy is seeing through the imposition of the creature. Now, does it matter whether you stay on the couch or not? Doesn't. Stay on the couch if you want to stay on the couch. Get off the couch when you want to get off the couch.
And eat french fries when you
want to. That's right. If you can. It's, you know, it's a risk and a thrill. To just drop out from under the influence of conditioning, bias, personification, to take the risk to see if there's something else one might discover than the repetition of myself. Not that many people are invited to take that journey.
It's difficult, though, is when you step off that mountain and you take that step. You can't go back.
This is entirely irreversible.
Yes.
Yeah, it is. That's right. You can't undo the insight of cessation.
Mm-hmm. It is amazing how little we have to do with this.
Yes.
It's quite lovely, actually.
Okay. I'm in.
You do have to keep the entanglements at bay, though, if you continue with this. It can be difficult.
Well, you know, your personification, anyone's personification, has come about involuntarily and miraculously. The entanglements of a life come about involuntarily and miraculously. The unwinding and unbinding from those entanglements comes about involuntarily and miraculously. Mm-hmm. Never once were you called upon to do or not do anything. Freedom of the order of magnitude that we're playing around with can release you from the imagination that anything happened to you before now.
I keep getting these, I don't know, I'm afraid to say it because it just sounds so strange.
Be very afraid.
I mean, honestly, I mean, look at it. You could have just been zapped down with like a play in your mind that says, okay, you're here and this is what happened to you. Boom.
Yep, that's
and
right.
Somebody could have just went, poof.
Yep, yeah, that's right.
Or the really interesting thing I thought is that I could have already lived my life already and I'm just kind of
remembering it
or just watching it, or I could be going from the end of my life back the other way.
You're Benjamin Button.
I hated that movie. That was so terribly done. It was so, it was an amazing concept, how they did it was just so irritating to me. Because I was like, they took an amazing concept and totally like
Hollywoodified it.
Just fucked it up. Just it was horrible.
I enjoy having strong opinions about movies too.
Right. That particular one.
Yeah.
Sorry, I know. Sorry,
you don't have to apologize to us.
Oh, no, I'm sorry to have such a...
We're happy to be, you know, strongly opinionated, richly opinionated.
It was just such an amazing concept, and you would have thought if someone could have thought up that concept, they could have made the reality of it.
Rewrite it.
I mean, the name, too.
Rewrite it. We'll call upon the Pebble Hill thespian community to film it.
Oh.
Yes.
I just find that humor and being, you know, a little bit of levity really is handy in dealing with life circumstances.
Yeah. Well, you know, bringing up the institution we know and love as Pebble Hill and its constituents and the relationship that we may have or not have with it is, you know, another way of exploring why here, why these people, you know, are you nourishing them? Are they nourishing you? What role does it play or fit into your, you know, life view? Do you really need them to be different? Or are you okay just being different yourself, mm-hmm. with or without them?
Mm-hmm.
There's all kinds of ways to spend a Sunday morning.
Right, it's being recorded.
I'll clip it.
I think it's very good that he really sees the good in people. Almost to a fault, and I think I'm more on the complete opposite end of the spectrum.
Huh.
At times.
Well, keep it up. The world would stop spinning if the two of you ever agreed.
That's right. If you had too much of one thing, it would wobble.
That's right.
If it wasn't for the shadow, we'd be freaking toast.
Yeah.
It's true. I mean, when people go, oh my God, the stuff that's being revealed in the world, it's always been there. It's just bubbling up into the light.
Mm-hmm.
You get to dance and say, okay, what does this creature want to do in response to?
Well, for a reaction, there's a reaction.
Yeah, and I like that we're not really the authors of our lives. But we can allow the movement of our lives to do itself without so much angst.
When you can.
You know, like with the involvement of, oh, I did it right, or I may have to make it work, or I have to avoid this, as opposed to, you know what, I think there's something going on here, and it has nothing to do with my assertion of I.
When you can, when you are miraculously empowered to back away from the entanglement of human conformist reality, mm-hmm. then you'd be wise to do that. Before then, no amount of coaching could assist you.
Yeah, who am I to say someone should not be entangled?
That, yeah.
Maybe entangled is their way of dancing, you know? And it's like, and my judgment is I would be trapped if I were them.
Mm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Or I'd be liberated if I were them. And it's all...
Again, that becomes the, you know, the privilege, let's say, that you or anyone has to believe anything you want to believe about anything and frame a scenario, hypothetical or otherwise, in which you find yourself as a binding member of the tribe.
I think somehow or another word, convinced of some sort, somehow, that something is not real until it's verified with another. And that's a concept that is not the case.
Well, even what appears to be verifiable or verified is, you know, ever liquidating. All there is experience. That might be the case, suggests or infers the appearance of a world. There's nothing you can actually derive from the appearance of the world. If and as one discovers that, oh, I am not of the nature of experience.
The nature of the present.
There's no.
I am the ghost of Christmas
past. That's right. And then,
sorry.
Well,
sorry, that just
well but you are the ghost of Christmas.
You did it wrong.
Marley and Marley. Yeah. This is it's a very simple but quite marvelous inflection. If you sense yourself and you sense experience as being binding, influential, then you can't help but to be an elemental in a world, creature in a world. And you or one goes about their business from that perspective, from that bias, agreeability and disagreeability with all things. But if you are not a creature in a world, if you are not duped by the profound undulation of experience, you don't have anything to agree or disagree with.
Yeah.
There is, you could say, an absolutism which has no dalliance with perspective. What if you have nothing to offer anybody in and of the world but radical insight that no one is a product of experience? Who will come and take the gift from your hand?
For something to be missing, you have to presume that you have a handle on some reference point of whole. And that reference point of whole is just a made-up thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the lack thereof, the piece in search of, you know, the missing element or the longing unfulfilled, whatever that is.
But it can't be given to anyone else. I was going to ask, I think too, that to get to that point where, I mean, for me, I guess, the beginning was when I was trying to hold so tightly to my reality and then all the balls just dropped.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think that to get to that point, you have to go through some real realization most of the time? Or do you think it becomes more natural? I mean, I guess it shouldn't really, I know we don't talk about the path.
It can look,
gazing back,
you can find what appear to be milestones, mm-hmm. events, causalities, right? Pressure-driven, right? Catharses of a kind that can appear to be ratchets up, ratchets forward.
Ratchet. Yeah, it just seems to me that I just remember thinking, okay, I have to get all this, and then it was all like, okay, and then all of a sudden I just said, I can't juggle all of this anymore. And then
the world,
balls just went,
the world
and then I went,
drops all by itself.
Yeah, and then I went, I'm still here. Nothing happened because I wasn't.
Yeah.
You know, and I was like, okay.
Yeah.
And then you kind of just gently continue forward, and then you're like, well, what happens if I don't do this? And then what happens if I don't do this? What happens if I don't do this? Or I don't have to do this. I don't have to do that. And then you're like, huh, I can just sit here. And then it's like, how little can I do? And it's quite interesting, actually.
That's a fun yoga.
I'm good at that one.
I've never been very good at that one.
I am. I get a coffee house to coffee house.
I know. You're very... I have to stop myself before those, somehow the momentum begins to just... It just gets me. And then I'll be able to pull back and stop. But I'm constantly feel as though... There's this momentum that wants to just entangle.
Yeah. Although, like, you can't really be entangled unless there is some sort of impulse to get all mixed up in something.
Well, it can be fun.
And if we are mixed up in something, it doesn't mean anything if we're not identified. So hooked in is... Less anyway, so it's like, right, so I got 13 burrs in my hair. I don't know where I'm going with that. Might as well just shave me bald. I'm done. It's not going anywhere, meaningful. It's sensible. It just kind of had to do with the fact that if you find yourself in the shittiest condition, you're only, you know, an instantaneity away from total liberation, because the condition doesn't reflect what you think it does. Like, I am that. It's like, oh yeah? Okay, and you're in shape.
You can do so little that you can't find a condition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's nothing to... There's really no beef with it. Without anything changing. Without any adjustments or without any sudden awareness or knowledge of something.
Nothing.
It's almost inverse that.
That's right.
Nothing. The presumptions have fallen off the tree.
Nothing you can find had anything to do with what you think you found.
Smoke a little and all of a sudden you've figured out the entire...
That's right.
I've done that a million times. Yeah, I'm surprised the universe isn't cranking on all cylinders considering how many times I've done that. Yeah. Sage on demand.
Yeah.